Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
Good day, folks. Welcome to the session. I'm your host, Justin Crosley. We are back in the studio again and excited. I'm always excited, but I get particularly excited when my friends come in the studio and returning once again, not on Zoom, not on the phone, not in his steamy cool ship room. Vinny Chilurzo from Russian River is back with me.
Justin, how are you?
I'm doing great, man. It's good to see you.
I heard we jacked up all your equipment on that cool ship trip. I only learned that from the last podcast.
Because I would never tell you. I would never say that to you. But yeah, it could be a coincidence, but my mixer definitely fried after that.
Sorry.
It was okay. I thought it might happen anyway. A very humid room that... whose idea was that? Yours?
I think it was.
Yeah.
I feel like I owe you $1,200.
I did exaggerate. I got it fixed for $200, actually. So we're good.
Okay.
Yeah. It all worked out well. Yeah. Teresa Pasuti's back in the studio with us today, too. Hi, Teresa.
Hi. That's so happy to be here.
Good to see you.
Back with Vinny.
Good to see you again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we got a good show planned for you tonight. If you're watching live on YouTube, welcome, or Facebook, you're there too. If you're nearby, though, I would come down to the Hop Grenade tonight, because after this show, Vinny has agreed to do a guided tasting in our tap room, which... I'm such a slow learner sometimes. I've been doing this show out of here for 8 years. I've never had a guest go out and do a tasting after the show before. So, in my defense, the shows used to be 3.5 hours long.
They did.
So to ask a guest to do one more thing just never felt right. And now that they're short, I was like, you know... It certainly for our most popular breweries here at the Hop Grenade, I was like, it's really a crime to have Vinny sit in this fishbowl and then walk out the front door. So you were kind enough to go, yeah, heck yeah, let's do it.
I think I did a guided tasting with you once, but I think it was at like your house or in the garage.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Like for the listeners, like you're going through your beers.
No,
that
I think it was after we were done. We sat in your kitchen and drank through.
Yeah.
A bunch of beers, and it was kind of a guided tasting.
So once again, I benefit, and nobody else gets the, you know.
That was before, you know, this place existed.
Right.
This, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. When you had to sit in my steamy garage to do shows. So really, the Cool Ship show was payback is what I think it was. So we're going to do a tasting after the show. And I know that will make some of you who are elsewhere jealous, but I just wanted to put that out there. If you're close by, you probably want to come by. You get to have a Pliny with Vinny. That's how I marketed it. Have a Pliny with Vinny. Like, who gets to do that?
That's right? Huge. So, like, honestly, there's going to be a lot of people just like listening.
Right. Plus... Vinny let me have my favorite sour beer. We have Beatification on tap, which that's a rare event in itself.
Amazing.
So I'd get down here tonight because I'll be drinking it for the rest of the however long it lasts.
That's why I didn't I didn't bring a bottle to taste.
Because we have, yeah.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
Exactly.
I think it's also why my staff didn't put it on tap when it came in earlier, because I would have drank half of it by now. So
when we're about to make another blend as we get into the cold season,
okay,
then we will empty a bunch of barrels, make some fresh Cynambic, the base beer, and then we'll use some of that to help charge the next one for sugar and yeast and that sort of thing. So we're getting close with this cooler weather.
How many different shuns do you have that are wild fermentation beers?
Only the beatification.
Oh,
but
okay.
We use a lot of Cynambic. Cynambic's our playful term for lambic, but lambic's a protected term.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Truth be told, it was Brian Hunt's idea, Cynambic.
To use Cynambic, okay,
yeah,
nice.
So I still never paid him a royalty or anything. Yeah, yeah, Natalie's never written him a trademark fee check or whatever. But anyways, there you go. I give all credit to
there
Brian Hunt.
So. Did Brian officially sell Moonlight?
Only the half that Lagunitas owns now, Patrick Rue.
Oh, is that who
got it? Yeah, yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, so Brian, I was actually on a local radio station last week with Tyler from Third Street and then Brian, because we all won awards at GABF. And
congratulations.
Brian was right there. He got the gold medal for his Saison. I thought that was the first time he'd ever entered, but technically it was his third. And then he dropped the mic, said, "I judged at the third ever GABF." And I was like, okay.
Yeah. He promised me he would come back on the show after the sale, because I told him I wanted all the nitty gritty. I wanted him to tell me everything. And he said, "Well, I'll be happy to do that, but I can probably tell you more once that piece sells." So now that it's done, I got to reach out to him, get it back on here.
But he still has the half, I believe.
That's good.
Yeah.
But he still, he couldn't trash talk Heineken or whatever with the other half was still owned. I'm paraphrasing. Those aren't his words, So... Anyway,
Moonlight was probably a rounding error on Heineken's balance sheet.
Right. Like, that had to be a favor to Tony, right?
I don't know.
It's something weird like that. I'm going to get the word from Brian. Brian's been pretty forthcoming on this show. Yeah. So real quick, hey, thanks to our sponsor, More Beer. They sponsor this show and every show that we do, and they always have. And just wonderful, wonderful people. I never get tired of saying it. You can go over to morebeer.com and check it out. They ship all over the country from two different locations. So if they don't have what you need, nobody does. Go check them out at morebeer.com. And check out their YouTube page. They do Free Beer Friday every Friday. Chris Graham, gets a little tipsy and starts giving stuff away. Same thing he does when he comes on the show. But now he does it every Friday over on their YouTube page. So go check it out there and tell them that we sent you. And then real quick, this will only work for those of you listening live or watching on YouTube. Hop Grenade's inaugural Pale Ale Festival is happening Saturday, November 5th. Both of my guests today have entered beers into that. It's a bit of a competition. And then, of course, it's the first Pale Ale Fest of its kind, especially certainly here at the Hop Grenade. My favorite style of beer. Vic over at the Bistro already owns the IPA Fest idea. He's a friend, so I can't go stealing that. So I was like, let's do Pale Fest.
Yeah.
You know what I'm finding, to be in all honesty? The brewers are so stoked. All of you brewers are. My customers could give a shit.
I'd love to have a good reason to brew a new pale ale.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
All the brewers, and I've never gotten such a fast answer to my invite. Like, even the Brews Festival, it's been going on for years. Yeah. That takes a while for everyone to get back to me. Everybody answered me within like a day about Pale Fest. My customers, we sold like 20 tickets so far. So go buy tickets. It's unlimited pours of some of the absolute best beers you will have. I mean, just think about it. If the brewers are that excited about it, you're all putting your best foot forward. Like, no one's sending me shit.
We scheduled a Row 2 Hill 56 brew.
For that,
work backwards to have an ultra
nice
fresh batch.
Yeah, I love
that. That's our all Simcoe beer, which we'll be having our tasting later on tonight.
Perfect. Okay, good. Yeah, and a couple of brewers have told me that. Like, if they didn't do a one-off, they're like, well, we're not just sending some random keg of our pale either. It has to be fresh batch.
But how many are going to really make IPAs to try to, like, up the ante with the judges?
Yeah.
I want some judges that are like, this is a pale ale.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And if it doesn't, it gets disqualified, right?
Yeah.
You're not the first to comment on that.
Yeah.
I'll tell you off air that I got someone accidentally forwarded me an internal conversation from their brewery that said,
that's good.
Basically said, I bet IPA wins.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we you need to like I don't know, like so like you make Sierra Nevada Pale Ale is the benchmark.
The bench, yeah.
You know. Yep. And then like so that should be every judge should have a fresh bottle of
I think you're right.
Pale Ale
yeah.
next to them.
Yeah,
to
so
judge
they can
it.
Like compare
yeah.
them.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I once was judging the Saison category at GABF and Carl Keen, who's a well-known Belgian who comes over for judging a lot. Was on the panel, Lauren from New Belgium and several other notables were on the panel. We got down to like the last five beers, and someone said, oh, we should like decide that, okay, the benchmark, because these are all American beers, so no foreign beers.
Yeah.
The benchmark of a great Saison is DuPont.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I said, oh, I think this one should get the gold. And Carl kept championing this other beer. And then finally Carl's like, in so many words, because he's like the nicest guy in the world. He's like, you know, I was just there last week, so I know exactly like what a fresh. I'm like, okay, you win. Your beer yeah. gets the gold, mine gets the silver.
There you go. Yeah, so, yeah.
It's the same thing. Like Sierra Nevada Pale Ale is the
yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, and Sierra has entered, but they're not entering their pale ale, so that it's perfect. We could still yeah. use it as the benchmark
really
for judging.
Such a beautiful beer.
Yeah, I know we're gonna catch flack no matter what. However, the judging and the award goes, but whatever. We're excited about it. So you can go to thehopgrenade.com, and then you can click on the link on events and get your tickets to Pale Ale Festival. All right. Thank you to all of our supporters who have been donating over the years. You can do that by clicking the donate button on our homepage. It helps. If you don't want to do that, no problem. You can do your Amazon shopping. I know you all shop on Amazon. They control us somewhere in our mind. So you can do that by clicking the Amazon link on our homepage and then just go on about your business. I'm not spying on your purchases or anything. And then also just support our sponsors. That's a great way for you to keep this program alive and well like you've done all these years. So thanks for all of that. All right. Should we just dive into this beer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we had to start drinking before we
yeah.
went on air.
Agreed.
So this is two beers in the glasses in front of us here in the studio. They're both Saisons.
Mm-hmm.
And the one on the left is called Robert.
Okay.
It's just an old school classic, Yvon de Bates from De La Seine would say modern Saison.
Okay.
Doesn't have any acidity, doesn't have any Brett. The yeast is diastaticus, so it will ferment through almost all the sugars,
okay.
making it super dry. And then the one on the right is Yonami. It's the exact same beer, but finished with Brettanomyces.
Oh, right.
And then the cool thing, and Teresa, you can see, if you put the Robert label on the left side, uh-huh. and then the Yonami right next to it on the right, separately they make
yeah.
you know their own labels, but together... They make a whole scene of like old Antwerp.
Yeah, hold that
and
up to your camera.
It's a pretty cool little design there. that we made. But I love Saison. It's one of my favorite styles. It's such a good food friendly style. They're really hard to make well. They're ultra ultra dry, so you have to be really careful to not get too astringent.
Hmm.
We only ferment our Saison in open top fermenters at the Windsor Brewery
to help with that.
Yeah, we think that it makes for a cleaner beer, but also there's a well known Saison yeast, which is kind of a mix into our yeast that really doesn't want to ferment if it's not in a open top.
Interesting.
So the DuPont strain is known to just stall out, but if you ferment the DuPont strain in an open top, it just goes right through. Yeah, we use a Saison strain from Omega. That's a blend of a couple different yeasts and the DuPont strain, and I think maybe French Saison. I can't remember what's in the blend.
Okay.
But it makes for just like an ultra, ultra dry beer. We really go for a big minerality, so we do a lot of water chemistry on the beer, on the Robert.
Mm.
But then when you drink the Yonami, again, same beer, same recipe, just yeah. finished with bread. It's a totally different totally different beer experience.
Yeah, so, you wouldn't know it's the same beer, everything else.
Yeah.
What makes it, you said, a modern Saison? What do you think is the distinction?
Oh, I think it's that if you look classically at old world Saisons, they did have bacteria and Brett in them.
Okay.
So
like the Genemy.
So, yeah, or maybe even like how a lot of breweries are making mixed culture Saisons that have a little kiss of acidity
mm-hmm.
to them. And And we were in, Natalie and I were in Belgium earlier this year, and we poured at an event at Cantillon, and I think we were pouring Yonami. And then, but I had bottles of Robaron back for friends, and I poured it for Yvonne. And Yvonne says, I said, oh, it's a classic Saison. He goes, that's a classic modern Saison.
Still classic modern.
Okay. Yeah. All right, Yvonne.
Tough cookie.
Because he's a historian of, of beer. And But I love how dry it is. Mm. I love there is no residual sugar. I don't know. What was it? A couple months ago, you had Chris White on.
Yeah.
And he was talking about, you know, being diabetic and sugar, and I think I texted you.
You did,
I was like, yeah, our Saisons don't have any residual sugar in them. So
yeah, because I think you heard me too. Like, I sort of, as I'm getting older, I'm kind of watching my intake and at calorie intake too, right?
Yeah.
And you were like, hey, dude, when I do, I switch to Saison.
Yeah.
So
yeah, these, and that's what I love about this yeast is that it ferments through everything. Like, if there's, we bottle condition both of these beers. Obviously, the Robert doesn't get the Brett, but if there's, let's say, half a degree Plato left of sugar at the end of primary fermentation, and then we condition the tank for a while cold, run it through the centrifuge to remove the yeast, and then when we're calculating the bottle condition yeast, that half of Plato sugar, we will count that towards what is gonna be needed to carbonate the beer.
Interesting.
Otherwise, if you don't count that, it will ferment too, and then you'll have overcarbonated beer.
Wow. It's the same yeast used to bottle condition?
Or no.
It's different?
It's not, but even with the centrifuge, there's some of this.
There's just a little bit left.
There's a little bit left, and it will eventually eat through everything. So we are ultra, we've learned with this yeast, but I do love how dry it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we love what you can do with an open top with a beer like this. You can really gain a lot more ester profile because of the surface area and being open to the air. And
of the Saison DuPont would be an open.
You know, they used to be. Okay. They were in squares. That's the one brewery we missed. Well, we missed three breweries in Belgium because we got COVID there.
Oh,
so
yeah.
You know that.
Yeah.
We've talked about it. We were literally leaving Florinville. That's near where Orval is.
Mm-hmm.
And woke up. I don't feel good. Took a test. Shit.
Oh,
COVID.
Gosh,
anyways, we were supposed to go to DuPont, like, drive right there. So we didn't go. But I think I've heard that they're no longer doing open tops. But
then they would have had to figure out how to get that yeast to do the same thing based on your experience.
Exactly.
Okay.
But there's so much to be gained from open top fermentation. I mean, it's a ton of more work and more potential contamination. But you're able to skim the yeast or skim the hop particulates and any dead yeast cells and any trub that gets through, because, you know, the convection of the fermentation will carry it into the foam, which you can't do that in a closed top. And you can see it as well. Like, I was just skimming some schmegma off the top of one of our, we have a little 5-barrel open top fermenter our pilot brewery.
Oh, wow.
And I have a batch of Pilsner lager going in there right now. And I was just skimming it this morning, and there's a distinct different color of all of the hop particulates that made it through and the trub and whatever else. And it just makes for a cleaner beer. And so even on our big tanks, we have this big giant skimmer.
Yeah,
it's got a, you know, like a 6-foot, 7-foot handle on it, and you reach out and you skim.
And you've got that little like sled off the side too.
Yeah,
right?
Then we have and that's another way to do it. Is you can, if you're not going to reuse the yeast, you can use the skimmer to just push the yeast or that schmegma to the slide, and then it goes down, and you just get it out of the beer, because eventually that darker foam that's got the dead yeast and hops and whatever else trub will eventually get back in the beer.
Yeah.
And you'll end up with a little harsher flavor. Of course, you make great beer without open top
fermenters.
Because
you used to leave that. Yeah.
But
when you did, yeah.
But it's just the difference between small detail.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But are all your beers now produced in open tops?
No, not all of them.
Okay.
But all of certain beers, both our two lagers, Velvet Glow and STS, which I think we're going to taste next.
Mm-hmm.
Those are 100% open top.
Okay. Pliny?
Probably 10 or 15% of what, I mean, there's almost never a batch that's 100%.
Okay.
Open top every once in a while there is for fun, but okay. There's often a percentage of a batch of Pliny at the Windsor Brewery that goes through open top too.
Got it. So, is that because you just have to make too much of it to?
Yeah, and we also love the yeast profile.
Okay.
You get healthier yeast, you know, because the idea of an open top fermenter is that they're a 1-to-1 ratio. And so I already talked about skimming yeast, but you also, because there's no lid on the tank, you end up with a much healthier fermentation. The yeast is just happier.
Right.
You actually, you know, in normal fermentation, you should get a good pH drop. We see a much more steep pH drop in an open top fermenter because the yeast is less stressed.
Okay.
It's in a less stressful environment.
Right.
And so we will try to, we try to run anything through the open top if we can.
Yeah.
And
but that's what I meant, like volume wise, you just don't have enough open top to do of your
Yeah.
Now can you repitch from Pliny from the open top fermenter?
We could. Yeah. We just installed a new little yeast propagator that's going to allow us to skim the yeast off the top of an open top.
Oh, cool.
Take it to the little 1 hectoliter propagator and then go from there to our bigger propagator and be able to do like true top cropping. But it's true what they say that lager yeast is bottom fermenting and ale yeast is top fermenting.
Mm.
When you skim the foam off the top of Velvet or STS,
yeah,
there's not a lot of yeast in there.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
It's just junk.
It's just, yeah. Or it's just foam.
Yeah. Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
But it's beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I have like 300 pictures on my phone on just all open top.
Nice.
And any brewery I go to that has open tops. We were in Denver at this newer brewery called Cohesion that's making, when we were at GABF, that's making all Czech lagers. And he primary ferments everything in open tops. He didn't have anything in tanks, and I'm taking pictures of them.
We took
our crew to Anchor last week as sort of a team building day, and I've been to Anchor like a million times.
Yeah.
I'm still taking pictures of the open tops.
Yeah, they're still cool. And I'm glad that you said that about the top fermenting and bottom fermenting, because I remember when I was home brewing in glass carboys, it all looked the same to me every time. It was still just moving around it so much. So I think maybe just because of it's a smaller volume.
Yeah. But think of a carboy. It's, you know, it's probably a 1-to-2 ratio.
Hmm.
So, you know, it's whatever wide by, you know, probably twice as tall, maybe 1.5.
Yeah.
I mean, you get to big giant tanks at super large breweries, or, you know, those are like missiles, those outdoor tanks. Those are probably like 1-to-6 or 1-to-8 ratio, but the a well-designed open-top fermenter is a 1-to-1 ratio. It's as wide as it is tall.
Yeah.
And the yeast just absolutely loves it. You also blow off more of the fermentation, you know, like byproducts of fermentation, because if you think about it, a tall, skinny tank, the CO2 has a much farther distance to travel to scrub out those phenols and whatever, you know, negative flavors that fermentation creates.
Yeah.
And in a wide, squatty, short tank, the CO2 doesn't have to travel as far. And then there's no lid on it, so it can just escape.
Right out.
Because we even think about the bucket of water on a closed top fermenter. You want to have the most minimum amount of water in that bucket.
Yeah.
Because it's still pressure.
Because that's still pressure.
Yeah.
So 28 inches of water, let's say from the bottom of your blow-off hose or tube, let's say you have 28 inches, that's 1 PSI right there.
I see.
Roughly.
Wow.
And so if you think about it, you go to breweries and you look back, like a brew pub that's, you know, the bucket's full completely, or maybe it's full of yeast and schmutz and whatever that blew out the top.
Yeah.
And all that pressure is there, you know, it's a 32-gallon trash can or something.
Never would have thought about that.
Because
you just feel like, hey, sanitation is what's key here.
So,
fill it up and walk away.
Yeah.
Right.
So we're even looking at that on our closed tanks.
Okay.
But that's one of the differences between open tops and closed top too, is that in an open top, there's no lid. So yes, there's zero pressure that's even pushing down on that beer, whereas in a closed tank, even if you have it, you know, to a blow-off bucket, like all of us would, you still have some pressure with all that beer.
Well, and the bigger the tank,
the more pressure.
Mm-hmm. We even recognize that in our little brewery, like some of the beers will behave differently if they're in a 15 barrel versus a 45.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. I remember when we were making Brux, our collaboration with Sierra Nevada more than a decade ago, and they were starting to do some work in R&D on some brand. But because they knew we were gonna take this brand big, but the shorter tanks in the pilot brewery, they would ferment under pressure to mimic the pressure they were gonna see on those 800 barrel fermenters that you see in front.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty cool. They were using it just the opposite.
Right.
But to do everything they can to match
that
flavor profile.
Oh, that's interesting.
So anyways, I could talk forever about Open Tops, and I love them, and we just put in this little small mini 5-barrel one on our pilot.
I gotta see
brewery.
That's funny.
Yeah, that looks like a...
It's cute.
Did you have it built like by fun. The same people who built your big
Absolutely.
Ones?
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Natalie,
so is it just a mini version of them?
It is, yeah. It's got
awesome.
The CAP ring and everything.
Oh, that's
and,
cool.
Natalie's like, do we really need this? Like, no, it's a want to have, not need to have.
Yeah.
But... And she's like, that's pretty freaking cool.
Yeah.
We're waiting. I think it's going to show up in a couple of weeks finally. But one of those chef's demo mirrors.
Yeah.
So we're going to put that up. So when you're in the restaurant, you're going to be able to look up.
Oh, cool.
And then see, because we can only make it so short.
Yeah.
And it's still maybe like 5.5 feet tall. So you got to get on your tippy toes.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great idea.
It'll be fun.
I feel like you guys should make keychains of your with a little Russian river. I would buy that keychain.
I like that.
Yeah, everybody be like, why do you have a little like portable fire pit keychain?
Yeah, brewers would know.
No fire pit.
Yeah, that is mm-hmm. that is the magic vessel.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's do this. I'm going to get us to a quick break here. And when we come back, I want to talk just briefly anyway about bottles and cans.
Perfect.
Because... you're new to cans.
I know, and I brought cans of STS to drink. So
oh,
it's
great.
You didn't even set me up, or I didn't set you up. That just
you'd already
was
done
random.
It.
Yeah, it's Perfect. What was in the gift shop.
All right, so quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about cans and bottles with Vinny at Russian River. Hang in there. It's The Session. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Session. Thanks for hanging out with us. We're still here with Vinny Chalurzo from Russian River Brewing Company. You can go to RussianRiverBrewing.com. I went to abbreviate that because I was like, oh, he must have rrbc.com. I hit the button, and it's some jerk. It says this URL is for sale for $30,000.
Of course it is.
And I know, and I was like, oh, I'm sure that got
Vinny's goat
for a minute.
You can shorten everything to rrbeer. That was the best we could do.
It's the best you do. Okay,
yeah.
rrbeer.com.
Yeah.
There we go.
And all of our emails shorten that way, too.
Nice.
Everyone has two emails at Russian River Brewery. You get the long, drawn-out one.
Or just rrbeer.
And then the rrbeer, which is a lot easier if you're on the phone than, you know, rrbeer.
All right. Well, I teased before the break that I wanted to talk about cans versus bottles with you. And this is a bit of a follow-up from our show that we did in the Cool Ship Room, because we were talking about the difference between DO and TPO. You were educating me on that. I've since found that was even a couple years ago. Brewers are much more knowledgeable about that now. The more I talk about it to brewers, the more they're like, oh, yeah, no, we know about that stuff. But back then, you weren't canning at all.
No.
And just to remind our listeners, you know, one of those reasons, and there are several, I think it's important to note that Vinny stands out on a shelf of beers with his bottle. So, you know, marketing is something and tradition. But the other thing we talked about was that you just felt you'd never really get the oxygen levels low enough that, like, you like them, like you're comfortable with cans.
Right.
But at some point, probably during the pandemic, you thought about cans.
Yeah, and I know we're going to eventually get to the pandemic because
we
talked about it, texted about it briefly yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
But yes, we did start canning at the front end of the... Maybe, was it before? I think we started before, but cans really helped us tremendously.
Okay.
We weren't going to go out of business.
Yeah.
Whole Foods in particular was... very, very good to us.
Okay.
And we hit the sweet spot with independent markets like Whole Foods. Whole Foods being our biggest, you know, off-premise chain. But, you know, at the same time during the pandemic, we were able to send kegs of beer to places like Hop Grenade and Toronado and all tons of accounts that were able to do growlers and crowlers, and that helped too.
Yeah.
So,
and you bought a canning line?
Yeah, and that's an interesting quick story is that, you know, we were using a local mobile canner, and at the same time, randomly, Sierra Nevada had bought a little inline canner, same type that mobile canners use.
Okay.
And, you know, Natalie and I are pretty close friends with the Grossmans, and Ken and I start talking about the inconsistency of an inline canner.
Okay.
You know, you have four to six heads filling, but then they take a certain amount of time. So they may get filled at the same time, but then they don't get seamed at the same time. And so they have varying degrees of oxygen contact with that lid, you know, not being seamed on.
Okay.
So Ken and I decided to go down this, because Sierra was looking to buy a small canner to do really good TPO, low TPO numbers for their pilot brewery.
Mm-hmm.
We were looking for one just to do small amounts of our beer. Because if you take draft off the table for us, on, you know, whether it's at our pubs or for distribution, just looking at bottles and cans, I think bottles are still like 98%.
Ah.
So there's bottles are still the majority of what we do.
Oh, okay. You're still bottling 98%? Percent of your
of our package
beer.
Yeah,
really?
That's not going to keg. Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah, we only do cans right now still for direct to consumer or at our two gift shops, small one-off stuff. Where okay. It has also come in handy for us is that we have, you know, this bottling line that does 10,000 bottles an hour. It's pretty tough to bottle 10 barrels.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy.
And
yeah.
So all of our small batches, so we transfer beer from the Santa Rosa brewery to the Windsor facility, and then that's a lot of the stuff that we can.
I see.
So like we recently canned Hop Father, or we'll do Citra Flash Mob IPA or Mosaic Stack or whatever small batch stuff. But so we were looking for an actual canning line. Sierra was looking for one that was for their pilot brewery. So Ken and I would like get one line and then we'd send it, you know, the company would, whoever the broker manufacturer was, would send it to the other one.
Okay.
And we would test it.
Oh, you're doing like demo canning lines.
Yeah, we demoed canning lines.
Nice.
We demoed two different canning lines, plus we had run the inline canners, and then we finally settled on something completely different, a CFT 10-2, so a 10 fill head and a 2 head seamer. And what we learned was that the inconsistency of the TPO in a can is less about that timing of the fill head to the seamer. That's a part of it, but it's not everything. It's that that can is moving and it hits the other can in front of it and it jostles.
Oh.
And sometimes it foams less and sometimes it foams more. So the absolute best canning lines always have at least two seamers, because then the cans never stop moving. They never have to get into a line and wait.
Hmm.
And we have a TPO tester that you can shut off the CO2. So we were running a TPO test every 5 minutes.
By the way, just for consumers listening, total package
oxygen.
Okay.
Yeah. And so you've got dissolved oxygen, which is oxygen in the beer, in the fermenter or the bright tank. You have shaken dissolved oxygen or shaken DO. That's when you shake the can or bottle for 5 minutes, pierce it with your same dissolved oxygen meter that you'd use the tank, and that will tell you the dissolved oxygen in the beer, but that's not going to tell you the headspace, because when you shake a can or bottle for the traditional, like 5 minutes is would be the standard procedure, you're equalizing the pressure, but you're not equalizing the actual oxygen content.
Okay.
There's still going to be more oxygen in the headspace. And then that's where TPO comes in, total package oxygen.
Okay.
And so total package oxygen is you either put in a machine, and they're crazy expensive.
Like okay.
$75,000 to $100,000.
Wow.
We have the Anton Parr TPO 5000. We are the first craft brewer to have it.
Okay.
They'd switch models, and
it sounds
we had
fake.
We had the
TPO 5000.
I know, it sounds like a robot. Yeah. It's got this red flashing light on the top. It's really cool.
Yeah.
But you put a bottle in, and 8 minutes later, it'll tell you the dissolved oxygen in the beer, the total package oxygen, which is everything combined, and the CO2 content.
Okay.
Now you can also take your shaken DO number, and then plug it into a spreadsheet calculator, and I think the Pentair Gehaltometer has a little program in it that can help you calculate this, but you also need to know your temperature. So you need your dissolved oxygen after you've shaken it, you need your temperature, you need your headspace volume, and then you need your beer volume.
Wow.
But you technically need to measure that every time, the headspace, because you, every can's going to be slightly, or bottle's going to be slightly different.
Sure.
Yeah. So that's where the automated machine just does it automatic every time. So we ran down, we went down this rabbit hole of finding the best machine with Sierra Nevada, ended up with the CFT. And ultimately, that's why I've learned, like, it's, and it's the way that the CO2 is jetting out under the lid. And then, but it's at the angle at which it's doing that, and the pressure in which it's doing that. And when you look at the channels that the CO2 is coming out of, they're not all equal the same size, and they're kind of working against each other. And if you do it too fast, you end up with a venturi effect. So it's just sucking oxygen, you know, as the CO2 is passing through, it's bringing oxygen right behind it. You're doing actually more damage.
Interesting.
So learned a lot about the process going down the rabbit hole of can lines, but we do have one. So
before we get into like where you're at, and maybe you can do this, give me a number for bottles and cans. Like, what's like the industry standard TPO, which I know is different than your number?
I think for most breweries, they would be happy at 80 to 100 TPO.
Okay,
it'd be pretty high for what we would consider.
And what are you happy with?
Is the TPO always higher than the DO?
Actually, it depends. Because DO is still a really important number, dissolved oxygen. Because if you, when I look at the CO2, the total packaged oxygen, and the dissolved oxygen, if the dissolved oxygen is high, it means that we have a problem at the filler.
And
so
because you knew what it was at the tank, and then at the filler,
and it's
indicative really high,
of the filler. Typically, it's like some loose valve or something,
right?
But if your TPO, if your DO is high, your dissolved oxygen is high, but then your total pack, if your dissolved oxygen is low, but your total package oxygen is high, it's probably at your fobber. Or your underlid gasser, if you're doing,
not capping on foam,
that's what makes it so difficult with cans. Is that cans, you can't seam on foam for the most part. You really need to rely on the CO2 jetting out, or underlid gas, and then even so, if you are foaming up either in a bottle or a can, you want the bubbles to be as fine and small as possible. The larger fisheye bubbles, as they call them, are full of oxygen. You need to get those things out. And if you think about most bottles, they're tapered. So, of course, they're going to push the foam out, and they're going to be it's going to push more oxygen out. And thus, bottles, all things equal, will always have a lower TPO, which
and
is
with
why...
less effort.
Is why I've always believed in bottles. Yeah. Granted, I do see cans. They're convenient. Mm-hmm. You take them to the beach, blah, blah, blah. Once you seam a can, it is completely sealed.
Okay.
Albeit if you're using an inline canner that has really bad TPO, you're now trapping all that oxygen in there as well. But that's going to happen no matter what if you have a bad filling situation.
So what's your number for bottles that you like?
So bottles, we're trying to be 20 to 25 parts per billion TPO. Right now, cans, were 40 to 50 is where we want to be.
Okay.
And we're, you know, the thing about the problem we were having with inline canners is that we were having these random cans of like 250 or 300. And that's just the ones that our lab was catching.
Oh, yeah.
And then the next one would be at like 60 or 70, you know, and then every once in a while we'd get a 30 or 40. I would rather be consistently bad or consistently good,
so that it's,
but these
consistent
random cans were kept me up at night, and that's ultimately why we did the sharing with Sierra, with Ken, because we knew that the two of us together, our teams were already friends.
Yeah,
our packaging manager used to work at Sierra, so there was already this relationship there
to get it right,
and we just shared everything, and then we finally made a decision together.
So let me ask you this, and I've probably asked you this before. Because you encourage, at least with hoppy beers, right? With Pliny. You encourage everybody to drink it right away anyway, fresh.
Yep.
So who cares between 25 and 80? Right? That's you see what I'm, because the whole point is shelf stability, right? Is that the point of getting rid of oxygen?
It's a part of shelf stability. For me personally, I say that low TPO is our religion.
Okay.
You know, that's like the backbone of what we do. And if I was to say to our brewing team, well, you know, what's the difference between 25 and 30? You know, then it's like, well, what's the difference if I flush the line enough or, you know what I'm,
I do.
You know?
Yeah, I do. Well, then let me rephrase, let me ask it a little different too. Drinking Pliny a week out, will I as a consumer taste a difference between, if I was a very savvy consumer, between 25 and 80? Or are we always talking like, this is more like a month out?
If it was kept cold?
A
week out, maybe a hair, you'd have to really, I mean, we drink a lot of Pliny at the brewery.
Yeah.
Maybe we would, maybe probably not. But the deterioration of a beer can or bottle goes down much more quickly. You know, with a high TPO and not kept cold through the entire chain of distribution.
Sure. And of course, I'm not advocating that you should not care. I'm asking because it's a very expensive endeavor that you've embarked on. Like making that the brewery's religion is an expensive decision too, right?
Yeah, and we use a lot of deaerated water to flush our lines. So instead of flushing with if a young, to be brewer comes to me and says, "Give me a piece of advice." I was like, okay, well, what category? Business, whatever. Okay, let's assume you have great ingredients, sanitation. I would, if I had to look back and, things that I would have purchased sooner, I would have purchased a dissolved oxygen meter. I would have bought an extra tank to be able to make batches of deaerated water. And then you can use deaerated water to flush your lines instead of pushing it with CO2. So we have a whole system that makes deaerated water.
Wow.
So the water goes down this pretty small column, and then CO2 bubbles up, and it's packed with stainless steel. And then the free oxygen gets out, and then that water goes through a heat exchanger, goes to a tank, and then we have a loop through the whole production brewery.
Wow.
That's deaerated water.
Okay.
And we'll use that to flush lines, because you can pack the line completely. And that deaerated water also goes through a UV lamp. And so the UV lamp keeps the water sterile.
Wow.
So you're not using it just to, like, not waste beer. You're actually, like, displacing all the air
oxygen.
Like, CO2, whatever. You're not trying to purge a line with CO2.
We don't even purge them with CO2. We just, after we
sanitizing.
Run peracetic acid.
Yeah.
Because if a little bit of peracetic acid gets into your beer, you're going to oxidize the entire tank. Hmm. And so you end up dumping a bunch of beer down the drain just to make sure.
Yeah.
And then, but if a little bit of deaerated water gets into your beer, it's sanitized. We call those Jesus units.
Okay. even better.
So let me ask you, actually, for my own edification here. So I have a Bright tank I don't often use.
Yeah.
How would I deaerate my water with no specialized equipment?
Yeah, you would just take hot liquor water and pump it into, and it doesn't even have to be full.
Yeah.
You could do whatever volume.
Yeah.
And then bubble CO2 through the hot water.
Okay.
And then the water already hot is going to have removed some of the oxygen.
It's going to push out most of the oxygen.
And then you
anyway.
Bubble more oxygen through it.
And then cool it down.
Some would say do it through a carb stone. I think you do it through the bottom either way. And then you end up with water, and then it'll cool. Cool it down. And then you end up with water that's just slightly carbonated. It tastes really good. It's like having sparkling water available all the time at your brewery.
But it is
really good to have to flush lines and whatnot.
Oh, I love that.
Okay.
So,
all right. I want to talk STS too. But as a summary of this and the expenditure on it, I think I've said this before too. It's one of my favorite short conversations I've had about you, because we were talking about this TPO that day. And I think I said, sometimes brewers say to me like, well, why would I spend money on a lab or more money on this? Like, I sell every drop of beer that I make. And your response was priceless. I hope it doesn't embarrass you. Your response was like, I'm paraphrasing.
Can't wait to hear what my answer was.
This is the way I heard it. we're Russian fucking river. You think we don't sell every drop of beer that we make before we make it? And we still spend a fortune on R&D and labs. And you do. And that's what I was getting at with you. Like, what? Yeah. You're like, because it matters. Because it's beer, yeah, and it should be the best it can be.
Yeah.
And I just loved that answer because I can't, and I haven't, maybe I've said it too much because I haven't had a brewer say it to me since. But I can't wait till one does. And I'll be like, bro, you still got to get better.
It's everything, you know? Yeah, quality is everything you do, and it's your reputation as well. And and that's what I loved listening to the last episode with Josh and Chrissy, because he was just like so excited to talk about Shaken. And he said Shaken Dio, and I was like, I was listening to it driving down today. And
nice.
I was like, oh, he got it. He knows it. Like, because it is the most misunderstood part of craft brewing, of especially with breweries that, especially in the pandemic, that have now started canning. And they, you know, are like, oh, yeah, I'm getting these great, you know, TPOs. I'm like, well, how do you do it? And explain that's Shaken Dio. Well, that's Shaken Dio and not TPO. That's the same thing. No, it's not.
Right.
But the cool thing is that, you know, we ran tests where you can we compared, like, doing it the manual method where you calculate it and all that, compared to our TPO machine, it's pretty damn close.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to have this $80,000 instrument. It's nice to have.
Yeah.
And it makes it really easy. And like, you know, I remember when Cooperage, local brewery up in Sonoma and Santa Rosa, was commissioning their canning line, they would drive over cans. And so we tested that if we pulled bottles off the bottling line, because we knew it was 20 minutes to drive to get the cans to us. So we did a test with our own beer, pulled the bottles off our own line, waited 20 minutes, and then ran them. And then we'd also run them at the right when we pulled them off. And we said, okay, well, there's a... Because if your beer is really active, it'll just start taking up the air right away.
Okay.
And we know we get 10 part per billion pickup, whatever it is. And we would just add that to the numbers that when Tyler would bring
Cooperage,
beer from Cooperage.
Yeah. Okay. So. To really get down to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how long would it be if it's like an hour and a half?
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
That's how far Crooked Lane is.
That's how far it is to Russian River from Crooked Lane, but...
All right. We got a couple beers in our glass. One of them, one of my favorite beers on the planet, STS Pils, which is unfiltered Pilsner.
Yeah, it's a Keller-style Pilsner.
Okay.
Using all Weyermann Pilsner malt, a little bit of acidulated malt from Weyermann. And then we use the main hop is a French hop called Aramis.
Mm. Mm.
And Aramis was actually originally bred for Anheuser-Busch. And then when InBev bought AB and they became ABI, they decided not to use the hop. And our good friend, Dr. Val Peacock, who is the hop guy from Anheuser-Busch, he took the early retirement when AB sold. His friends, the French hop growers, were like, well, Val, you helped us breed this. You told us to grow it.
What now?
Now you got to help us sell it. And so he went around and Val talked me into using it. And that was, I think, 2013 or something when we started making STS.
Okay.
So now it's like our number three selling beer.
Is it really?
Three or four, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
It's one of our top selling beers. And
all in open fermenters,
too? Yeah, it's 100% open top. And here with a lager, you really get the delicate nuances, the difference between, you know, good and great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course, you can make really nice lager in closed tanks, but just the ability to skim. And we're still doing all kinds of work, you know, on this beer. We do kind of push this through a little bit faster than we'd like to, but it's also, you know, I purposefully made this a Keller style, knowing that on a 5-week beer, it would then go into the bottle, or now can, or keg, with some yeast. So it kind of continues to lager.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean...
So Keller styles are great if you're a brewery that maybe doesn't quite have the tank space. We also make...
And if a home brewer out there wants to brew STS, there's going to be some sediment at the bottom of the bottle that could be...
Yeah, and that's all our Augustiner yeast, which we get from BSI. And That's a lot harder to get for homebrewers.
Okay.
But yeah, there's some in there. I mean, even the what we're drinking is got a little bit of a haze to it.
Mm-hmm.
And we lager Velvet Glow, our Helles, longer.
Okay.
We're working towards eventually maybe, you know, getting something going where we can lager even longer for that beer. That beer really makes a difference.
Okay.
But the STS, it does get better at like 8 weeks, but doing it Keller style helps. Yeah. And it's still like, it screams Russian River and then it's hoppy,
mm-hmm.
but it still has like classic notes of a lager, of a Pilsner.
I think so.
And
yeah.
And we dry hop it just a little bit, quarter pound per barrel, but we dry hop it cold at 42 Fahrenheit. So it's not like an IPA dry.
When you guys
aren't
doing lager tanks for this, it's a...
No, I would love to have some horizontals someday, but right now we go open top, and then we rack to the closed top fermenters, finish fermentation.
Hmm.
We finish fermentation, cap it, dry, drop the temperature, and then once we hit 42, we dry hop it for a couple days, dump the cone, and then get it down to 32, lager it for another couple weeks, and then we're off to packaging it.
Okay.
So, but we make it year round. And
what do you think about this next to Pivo Pils?
Well, gosh, we were drinking this together earlier this year when we were making Stevo.
Okay,
down at
I forgot about Stevo.
Well, now Matt has made a whole series of that. I just had Sevo, which he made nice. With Humboldt seed the other day.
That's cool.
That humble seed Sevo was pretty damn tasty.
Yeah.
I heard Matt talking about some other collaboration he did with someone. It was some other play on that. So he's making a career out of collaborations with Pivo. I'm a huge Pivo fan. It was one of the influences on this. You know, as we hone in this beer and Velvet, we're looking to Germany a lot mm-hmm. for those intricacies that the Germans use.
Yeah. So. Well, and Helles is getting a little bit of buzz. We've had more Helles on tap here in the last, you know, year or so than ever because craft brewers are kind of getting into that style, which makes me so happy.
Yeah.
I mean, back in 2005 when I started the brewing network, I had just come back from Germany and had my first Helles ever. And it just kind of changed my life, really. And I remember going like, I wonder why craft brewers aren't into this. It has a cool name. Like, it seems very marketable. But I also think craft brewers weren't making great lagers back then. But anyhow, it's taken all this time, and now I'm seeing it get made. Yours, Wondrous, we just had one on here that was delicious. And I guess lagers in general are having their little moment right now.
But they're, you know, they're still, it's not. They always keep saying the year of the lager.
But no.
It hasn't come yet. It's I want it to. But,
but we just all keep working for it, just keep waiting for it.
We go, you know, like the water part is really hard for a, you know, Pilsner Helles if you're doing it the
right
way. I mean, mm-hmm. we do full reverse osmosis and then build the water back up. And so trying to be as true to that style.
Yeah.
It's funny. With STS, I'm more like, let's kind of make it a Pilsner but put a Russian River signature. The Helles with Velvet Glow, I really want it to be
German
classic style.
And that must be Augustiner yeast too, I'm guessing.
That's Augustiner as well.
Yeah. That's one, my favorite Helles.
One lager yeast and this next batch, we just keep making small tweaks too. And our sales team is liking having it available more and more. And they're asked, we jokingly call it our national sales meeting when all like six of our sales team come up to the brewery.
Yeah.
And they're all like, more velvet.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
That's so awesome. Did you always use Augustiner or did you kind of try some other ones? Because we've always used Weinstephan and we never used a different one. And we love that one so much. It's kind of hard to change.
You just stuck them.
We've always used Augustiner.
Mm-hmm.
This pilot batch, this R&D Pilsner I made last week was the first time I've ever used 3470.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Yeah, the Weinstephan lager yeast. So, and it's beautiful. I walked into the pilot brewery this morning and it had just this kiss of sulfur in the air. It was beautiful.
Cool,
nice.
Yeah. No, that's great. I have a pilot system I never use. I was actually, someone is bugging me to sell it to them and I'm like,
Yeah,
I'm never going to use this. But then you're talking about this. Maybe I should.
I don't know that we should call ours a... I mean, it is our pilot brewery, but it's a five-barrel system.
Oh, it's tiny,
It's a full-on, like... brewery.
Well, technically you have two, because then you have the More Beer pilot system also.
Yeah, that's our homebrew system.
Yeah.
And then we still have that.
Yeah.
And then we've got the five barrel that I brew on regularly.
Is the More Beer system still sitting on its own pad in the new brewery, like in that hallway?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Which I just find hilarious.
Right below the open top.
It's in this massive new brewery, and then there's this little homebrew system. It's the coolest thing. I took pictures just to send to Chris Graham when I saw it. I got to get us to a break here shortly because I've got at least one more topic I want us to get to before we have to go. And I thought, we can just talk about Pliny briefly because I think it'll lead us into the next topic.
Okay.
So what I wanted to ask you about Pliny, and you know, Pliny has been discussed extensively, right? But how many different varieties of hops are in Pliny now?
Probably 8.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's what I remember from. Perfect. So when we come back from the break, I think we're going to talk more about hops. Because I mentioned to you when we were discussing this show that with the beers I see come through the Hop Grenade all the time, I see far less varieties used in a single beer, but far more hops, obviously. And I think that, by the way, I also think West Coast IPA is... resurgence isn't the right word, but I think maybe hazies are going to stop being so popular and people are remembering West Coast IPAs. So I wanted to talk about that because I want to talk about how brewers are using hops now compared to Pliny.
Yeah, I get mad when people say like, oh yeah, West Coast IPAs are making a comeback. I'm like, they didn't go anywhere.
They didn't go anywhere. Yeah. And nope. I don't think they went anywhere, but the discussion now seems to be turning like, well, all the haze bros are maybe starting to realize that West Coast IPAs are just as good or better.
Yeah.
But anyhow, I wanted to talk about that because it's still probably the most popular double IPA on earth, yet it bucks the trend of, oh, you only need like Mosaic and something else and you're done.
It's pretty bitter,
it is. No auto-tune here.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so we'll take a real quick break, and when we come back more with Vinny, we're going to talk hops, we're going to talk hop creep, and maybe a little bit about new hop technologies too. Hang in there. It's The Session. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the program. Thank you so much for hanging out with us still. We are getting through some tasty beers with Vinny Chilurzo from Russian River, and we are talking hops. We don't have a ton of time left, which I kind of like now, because it just means you get to come back, in my opinion.
Yeah, we'll come back sooner than...
Yeah,
well, I was thinking about this driving down. We should do a younger...
Oh.
Something or other. I don't know what.
If you're not that busy already.
Well, because we're doing our in-person younger event at the pubs at a later date. We made that permanent. That was a COVID
thing. You're splitting the Windsor and the pub events.
So the in-person events at our two breweries will happen at the end of March into April.
Nice.
But for all of our accounts, like the Hop Grenade, Toronado, still get their beer middle of February.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah. And so
that's great.
So like last year, or earlier this year, Natalie and I were able to get out and go to a few of our accounts. And this year we're going to make a really big effort to go to a bunch more.
Oh, that'd
be
great.
So it's a lot easier for us to get out. And you know what? It is so much easier on tank space in the brewery.
I bet. Yeah. You're like, why didn't we do this?
Because we have half as much tanks tied up for younger, and younger is like a 6-week beer.
Right.
That's such a win-win. I mean, it's a win for retailers. It's a win for the brewery.
Yeah.
You can sleep a
little
more. Consumers
can technically get it twice if they want.
Sure.
Yeah. So, anyways. So.
Okay, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
So then we can do more hop stuff. But I want to talk a little bit about it. And let me start maybe by asking you this. So just before the break, you mentioned, all right, like 8 different hops in Pliny. And as I've said, you know, one of the most popular double IPAs, if not the most, you know, on earth. But these new kids, Vinny, they're making all their beers with 2, maybe 3 hops. Do you make any IPAs like that now?
We do. Yeah. Mosaic Stack and Citra.
Okay.
Flash Mob IPA.
Flash Mob, okay.
Yeah, Citra Flash Mob, just because 100% Citra tastes like cat pee. And those that can do 100% Citra, but I take my hat off to you because it's a really hard hop to do 100% with. And I can't remember. I think there's a little Amarillo in Citra Flash, and one other hop that I'm spacing on. But
yeah.
And then Mosaic Stack is like 90% Mosaic and 10% Simcoe.
Okay.
But there, it's legally allowed because most people don't know this, but Mosaic is Simcoe's daughter.
Oh.
So without Simcoe, Mosaic doesn't exist.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I've said this recently. I know brewers who refuse to even make a beer without Mosaic.
Oh, yeah.
Even a dash.
Yeah. Most of them don't even know. It's just like Citra.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you look at the pedigree of Citra, it's 20% Brewer's Gold. It's got Hallertau Mittelfrüh in it.
Wow.
It's got one other, like, German or English. I can't remember the exact makeup of it. You know, where's Tom Nielsen when you need him? Tom from Sierra. But like, it's like it's huge amounts of none of the hops that went in to make Citra, bred Citra, were like big. You know, Brewer's Gold was the most out there
interesting
hop, and that's probably where the you know whatever makes.
Yeah,
what it is, and along with the male. But anyway, so those hops, those beers do. But for Blind Pig and Pliny, there's still like 6 to 8 varieties. And the reason for that, it's kind of a throwback to Budweiser. Budweiser was always a lot of varieties,
really,
and that was so that if one variety ever, had a bad year, it wasn't so hard to replace it.
Right.
And so I've always kind of lived that way through Pliny and Blind Pig. And I know that's not the norm these days. You rarely see bad years, but
it could happen
with smoke taint. We just came across some hops that we've been using, and little by little they became a little smoky. And as the high hop notes dropped out, the smoke just became more intense.
Interesting.
And so smoke is something to really is the one kind of great equalizer right now that could affect your. And these were mosaics.
I went a brewery yesterday that I won't name, and I know the bartender well, and I was going to order this West Coast IPA of theirs, and he steered me away from it, and he said, there's a weird like smokiness happening.
That's smoke
taint. And I thought, I was like, well, how could, in my head, I'm like, how could that even happen? Yeah,
because of 2020 and 2021 harvest.
Ah.
Yeah, and I'm so sensitive to it.
Yeah.
I wonder, I've always say I'm price sensitive to it because bad Brettanomyces smells smoke and phenolic.
Okay.
It can be ashtray, it can be liquid smoke, it can be plasticky, but
right.
Those are all and a lot of times I was talking to the sensory manager at Haas at the Brewing Summit a few months ago, and like they're getting calls left and right. YCH identified like 80 lots of hops in the 2020 harvest, I think it was, that were smoke tainted. It's prevalent now, and New Belgium has done a ton of work. Hats off to them.
Yeah,
for what they've done. But but it's not surprising that you've got smoke, and it's not. And think of that. It's probably a brewery that does. If it's a small brewery, they don't get to do.
Small brewery
don't get to do selection. But we get to do selection.
Yeah,
and we still see smoke taint every once in a while.
Okay.
So, oh, wow.
Okay.
But so that's so. Thankfully, for the most part, the 2022 crop year that we just came off the vine is pretty much clean. There was a little bit of smoke up there, but it wasn't, the AQI wasn't in like the 400 or 500s. It was down in like the 150, which is manageable. So
well, that's good info.
But
all right, so and since we're short on time, I know that everybody would be interested in, at least brewers, I should say, in some of the research you've been doing on hop creep recently. I had a whole list of like hop questions for you.
That's going to be the younger episode.
I'll save my list. But you said something interesting to me when we were talking about this show, that you've been researching much with hop creep, which everybody is worried about and trying to figure out, and it's just such a mystery. You said something. You found something about hop seeds affecting it.
Yeah, through the we're a founding member of the Hop Quality Group, which is this group of now is like 60 or so brewers. It's an ad hoc group of brewers trying to kind of be a conduit between the hop growers and the beer industry. And everything we do is for the industry, even though it's a membership organization.
Mm-hmm.
So it means the whole craft beer industry benefits from it, whether you're a member or not.
Yeah.
And And so on one of our calls a few years ago, monthly calls, Val Peacock, the former hop, you know, director of hops at Anheuser-Busch, mm-hmm. mentioned like, hey, you guys talking about hop creep, you need to look at the seeds. I said, interesting. He goes, I bet you're going to find the enzymes are in there as well.
Oh.
So, you know, members of the hop quality group that use whole cone hops, there's not many of us, Deschutes, Sierra, yeah. us. And so...
You're not all whole cone.
No, right? We still use a ton of pellets and extract.
Okay. So, yeah, you don't... Although, even in the pellets, it would be ground up seeds, wouldn't there
that
be?
That makes it worse.
Yeah.
So, okay. If you're dry hopping with whole cones, you actually... have less hop creep, and that was a part of our study. So we did an initial study of just 2020. Then we did 2020, 2021 combined, same farms, in most cases same fields, and then compared them. That work we're compiling right now. We got a little bit behind last year with COVID and all, but we should have that fully compiled soon. But in short, we did, you know, just the whole cone. We then took the seeds out. Mm-hmm. And then dry hopped with whole seeds. We dry hopped with the crushed seeds.
Oh.
We dry hopped with the bract, the green material with the seeds removed, and all these different combinations.
Yeah.
And pretty much determined that the more seeds you have and the more they're crushed, the more hop creep you have. It's not the end all to hop creep.
Okay.
Because most hops have few seeds.
Okay.
Oregon tends to have more seeds than Washington, unfortunately.
Interesting.
But in short, those crushed seeds, and if you think about whole cone hops, if they have seeds in them and then they go through a hammer mill and then they get pelleted,
yeah,
they're going to cause more hop creep. Because if you dry hop, if you took, you know, the equivalent of 2 pounds per barrel in seeds and dry hop with the whole seeds and then the crushed seeds, the whole seed will have almost no hop creep.
Wow.
The crushed seed will give you like 60% of your hop creep. But then, like, we did Amarillo and Simcoe, because Simcoe's our number one variety, Amarillo too.
Okay.
And they're not proportionate exactly in how they have the fermentability run through a fermentation. So there's other things at play.
So it's not so much that every brewer should switch to dry hopping with flowers.
No. Like,
but it's...
It's more just being aware.
To think about it, yeah.
Yeah. And okay. If you're, you know, it's another reason why hop selection is a good practice.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, when you're selecting hops, are you investigating to visually see the seeds to avoid them? Yeah. I mean, how can you do that?
Yeah, you didn't before, but now you are.
Okay, that makes sense.
So Natalie and I sit at the... We jokingly say the hop selection at Russian River is a dictatorship, not a democracy.
Yeah.
It's just Natalie and I right now doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
But Natalie can just as well as I look through a hop cut, brewer's cut, and find seeds. We sit there at the selection table and start picking seeds out,
right.
And have a pile of seeds, and that now helps. It's not the end all of how we make a selection, but it helps influence us.
If all things were equal, you'd use that as a determinant.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Seeds are a big deal. Huh. And what makes it worse is that California ale yeast, just for whatever reason, drives more hop creep than, say, London 3
really?
A hazy. And we're a California ale yeast brewer.
Yeah.
A while ago, I tried using the German ale yeast, whatever that number is for
White Labs. Yeah.
Yeah. And it might even be called not even be called German ale. But I know a lot of brewers making beautiful IPAs with this German ale yeast. I brewed Blind Pig on our pilot brewery like 6 times, and I made a beautiful beer, but it did not taste like Blind Pig.
Right.
It's also a really fluffy yeast, and it doesn't settle, so it'd be really hard to manage in our situation because we're not set up for that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But so yeast has a big part of it.
Okay.
Is a big part of it too. But more on hop creep on that hop.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Oh, man.
But I guess I do have one final question about that as it regards to Pliny too, because one thing I asked you and other brewers is like, why are we all of a sudden talking about hop creep? It's been hoppy beers forever. And the answer basically that I get most is, well, it's because we're putting more hops in the dry hop than ever.
That's the main reason.
Okay. Well, but Pliny has been around.
Yeah.
So did you know about Hop Creep for years before everybody else? Or
when Jason Perkins discovered it, Jason from Allagash,
yeah.
he called us first.
Okay.
And we were just about to start building Windsor or design it. And I said, yeah, we have that happen. Uh-huh. I couldn't explain it.
Right. Okay. But didn't know why. Okay. Yeah, just curious about that. To me, it's so funny because there's so many like advances in brewing, and like I feel like kind of at a rapid clip right now with new hop varieties, which we'll talk about on your next visit, and all of that. And then y'all get thrown this curveball, like this problem that just seemed to come out of nowhere.
And every once in a while, we'd have batches at Blind Pig in the mid-90s went diacetyl.
We would send them off.
Yeah.
And get it tested, and it wasn't Pediococcus, and we didn't know what it was. Now I know it was hop creep. Because we were, but it's funny, back then we were, at most, we were dry hopping on our regular IPA at a pound per barrel, which now is pedestrian.
Yeah.
You know, that was our the original blind pig.
Pale ale dry
hop now. And then the double IPA back then, the anniversary beers, were 2 pounds. But we did get diacetyl every once in a while. So in hindsight, it probably was. But also, we've lowered the kiln temperature.
Okay.
And then also something that often gets overlooked is as an industry, we've lowered the pelleting temperature.
Okay.
And there's actually a lot more stuff.
But since it's enzymatic behavior, those things really matter.
Yeah.
Okay.
But there's a great ASBC article that Dr. Shellhammer from OSU is a part of, and they look at fungicides. And the more fungicides that have been applied to a field, the less hop creep they tended to see from that field.
I see.
So there could be some fungal stability that starts all the way in the field. Because I asked Jason Peralt of Peralt Farms, you know.
I like Jason.
Hop breeding company. I call him the Michael Jordan of hop breeders.
Because
pretty much everything he touches.
It's like a slam dunk.
He's like Mosaic, Simcoe.
He didn't
technically breed Citra, but he's a part of that.
Uh-huh.
Anyways, I was like, well, can we just go back and like try to grow Simcoe the way it was in 1999 when I first got it?
And see?
And it was like, no, because like we're using totally different, you know, ways to manage pests and this and that. And things just aren't even available. Because they could be impossible.
Yeah.
So I think...
You'd have to do it on your own small plot of land.
And you might even not be able to do that because maybe you couldn't even get the same fertilizer.
Right.
Yeah. So I think we're talking about just like a perfect storm. But I do think at the end of the day, we're just adding more and more hops.
Yeah.
And at some point, we just hit this tipping point. Because we've increased our hops. You know,
sure.
Teresa and I were talking off air between the last break about like, well, we've always changed. We've made small tweaks to Pliny and Blind Pig over the years.
Yeah.
And I think it's what has kept the beer relevant.
Sure. No, I think that's extremely important.
So,
beer is has always been so fascinating to me. It's why I can do this show for this many years, because I always like to say this, especially to new homebrewers. It just can be as simple as you want it to be.
Yeah.
Or as so amazingly complex that after centuries, we still don't understand some of the chemical and biological behavior that happens in fermentation.
Yeah.
It's really wild. It's a never-ending learning curve.
One of my favorite things to do is to go into the open-top fermenter rooms, and Natalie would agree if she was in the chair next to me today. And our rooms, they're quiet. You just go in there and you stare at the fermentation.
Yeah.
You watch it bubble. It's alive.
Right.
You listen to it. That was a Fred Eckhart thing.
Yeah,
Listen to your beer. Most of the young brewers today don't even know who Fred Eckhart is, but he's a genius.
Yeah.
Just you go in there and it's so zen.
Right.
And it's magical.
It is magical.
And you just like... Just in there for 5 minutes, a stressful day. I love going into the open top fermenter rooms and just watch it and listen to it. And every yeast is a little bit different. The Saison yeast is different than the Abbey Ale yeast. Mm-hmm. And it's different from the California Ale yeast. It's different from our lager yeast.
Right.
And they all look a little bit different. It's pretty cool. But even at the same time, like you go look at your bucket, you know, that the CO2 and you're thinking about, it's like, that yeast that's in there is eating the sugars.
Yep.
It's turning into alcohol, and it's just spitting out CO2. And it's like, that's amazing that it's doing that.
It really is. Well, like,
I don't think we stop and think about that enough.
We don't enough. And the monks did. Like, you know, it's, I feel like there's a reason that beer and fermentation was like part of the monastic lifestyle. Yeah. And it wasn't just so they can catch a buzz when they're fasting.
Yeah.
I would bet they'd explain it to us as like as close to a religious experience as you could have here on Earth.
And some,
like,
of those Trappist beers.
Yeah.
Because Natalie and I were just there. We traveled with Garrett Oliver in Belgium for a week before we got COVID. But like,
yeah,
it was so great to be back there drinking some of those Trappist beers, you know, some of them from the source.
Mm.
It's like, ugh. Yeah. These are such beautiful beers and beautiful glassware.
Just and developed over such a long period of time, and like they developed that beer because that was the best possible beer that could be brewed in with the water that they had and the equipment that they had. And like, I wish us American brewers could spend the time to figure that shit out, because like, you know, we're trying to do a million things. We're not trying to do the one thing that is the best thing for where we are in, like, space and time.
Right. Well, I mean, if you think about most of the Trappist monasteries, I mean, they all make, like, 1 to 3 beers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Orval mostly
makes
Orval. Can
you imagine only making 1 to 3 beers?
They do make a beer for their cafe. You know, Rochefort just made their 4th beer. Oh, boy.
You know? In centuries,
Westmalle makes 3 beers.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that is great. Because you hone in. Like, I know the thing, and I'm so grateful that we have a Pliny and we have a Blind Pig.
Yeah.
You know, because so many breweries now, and this is no knock on the one-off brewery that just makes a new beer, but you never get a chance to perfect that beer.
With the one-offs.
I love the challenge that, to how do we keep making Pliny better and better? How do we make Blind Pig better and better and tweak it? And maybe that's a slight tweak to the hop bill. Yes, Pliny is always going to be mostly Simcoe and then Amarillo behind it with supporting of all these other hops. But, you know, what's coming through the breeding companies or the breeding programs that can
even make it better?
Give us that little lift to make, you know, the hops, the Simcoe and the Amarillo pop a little bit more.
You guys are lucky that way. Sierra Nevada is lucky that way, where you're able to have these flagship beers that hold up the brewery, so you get to keep perfecting.
Yeah.
Whereas some of the new ones, and they chose to do the one-off route, they're kind of restrained by that.
I've had calls from owners from some really well-known Bay Area breweries that are like, oh man,
we wish
we, but like, we're gonna work towards that because this is exhausting.
Of course
there's lucky and there's fortunate, because you're making an intentional decision to run your business that way and have core beers and continually perfect those. I think it's really important for everyone
time.
To at least have a couple least have a couple that you go back to all the time to try to work on.
All right, well, that is about all the time we have. We have a tap room full of folks waiting for their guided tasting here, which is exciting for me, and I get to have fun talking more beer with you.
This is right on an hour and a half.
Look at that.
How much? I mean, we would have, at old days,
oh man,
this would have just been like halftime.
Well, exactly. especially because, like, I think I can speak for you, we enjoy it so much, like, when we get to talk about this stuff. Yeah. Like, I have endless questions for you. So, but now we just turn it into more episodes. I can even come to you next time.
That'll
we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
So thanks for being here, Vinny.
It was great to come down.
Please give my best to Natalie.
I know
she was watching today. She meant to be here, but couldn't.
She's
a little
under the weather, but
I got to see her for a minute at GABF, and that was fun.
Good.
But that's all right. She'll just, another reason for y'all to come back.
Yes. For sure.
We'll do that. Yeah. And okay, so thanks for being here. Thanks for sharing all the beer. And then we're going to get to our tasting. Thanks for the beatification, which I didn't even have it yet. I've been waiting for your tasting to do it. All right. Hey, thanks to our sponsors out there. Of course, More Beer, 21st Amendment. Go check them out, 21st-amendment.com. Just wonderful people that support this program. Blickman Engineering, Williams Brewing. So many wonderful sponsors that are keeping this thing going all of these years, and we thank them. And I thank you, too, for listening. We've got more shows coming up soon. Altamont Beer Works will be on the program soon. One of my One of my new favorites. I got to really love their beer throughout the pandemic when
They're
I was
doing good stuff.
They do really good with, I mean, they have a control over their hop character like many brewers don't. So I'm excited to talk with them about that. We got them coming up and more here on The Session. Teresa, thanks for being here, as always.
Oh, my pleasure.
Teresa, it's good to see you.
Yeah. Really good to see you, too.
Don't forget to go to Crooked Lane when you're in Auburn, or check it out wherever you are. Crooked Lane beers are wonderful also. In fact, Teresa just kindly brewed a tribute beer for a friend of ours who's turning 50. I'm excited to go try Solid Gold Wood next weekend at Crooked Lane.
Definitely not a penis reference.
No, not at all. It's a karaoke reference, actually.
It's a karaoke reference. Yeah.
So I will be at Crooked Lane next weekend hanging out with my friends there. So thanks, Teresa, for all that you do. All right, everybody, take care of yourselves and your beer. We'll see you next time.
Session is a production of the Brewing Network and brought to you by More Beer. Check them out at morebeer.com. Find more content and live video of this show on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/brewingnetwork. For sponsorship opportunities and information, please reach out to advertising@thebrewingnetwork.com. To reach our hosts, contact feedback@thebrewingnetwork.com.